We are Rogue Media Sports.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It is the Doomsday Podcast, and it's the just an hour or so after the Cowboys, they won it. I mean, for a second, Ed, it just looked like for all the world, the game had ended, all the wind had been sucked out of this place, but they win it. Dan Campbell, I think if they'd have marched him back to the 50, he still would have been going for two.
God bless him.
He didn't want
it did
to
not
do.
Need overtime.
So Cowboys do win 20-19, and we're in our usual perch at Cowboys games. Yeah, this is probably our last time out here. I think there would have to be some other things happen, and Arizona would have to get involved and help out the Cowboys tomorrow.
Or the Giants.
The Giants to bring us back here. But it's unlikely.
But tell people where we're located.
Yeah. Well, I was getting to that.
The historic moment.
We are on the Silver Level in a suite. Thank you to the Nation family for that. But, Ed, and we're looking at the Ring of Honor, and I see Tex, and I see Tony Dorsett, and there's Tom Landry. Coach Landry is right across from where we are. On a similar level, I mean, this is almost the exact same level. We're on the other side of AT&T Stadium. But, Ed, whose name is, like, right above the suite we're in right now?
That would be the newest member, the 24th member of the Cowboys Ring of Honor. Given that honor just today by Jerry Jones, who did not mispronounce his name, thankfully, like he did to Marcus Ware earlier in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Jimmy Johnson is the name right above us here. And I attended the Jimmy Jerry press conference, which took place at 4:30 at the stadium today. They both sat up on a stage with some large stuffed chairs and answered questions. They only took like four questions because they gave such incredibly long responses. But I thought, my thought coming into it today was, I remember because I was there on that Orlando night that marked the beginning of the end in 1994, that to diminish Jimmy Johnson, Jerry Jones claimed that 500 coaches could win Super Bowls with the talent that he was providing. And yet, here we are, only two coaches' names on the facade, only franchise icon Tom Landry, and now finally, 30 years after he coached his last game, Jimmy Johnson. And the thing that strikes me when I look across and I see Tom Landry's name and I looked across from the press box and saw Jimmy Johnson's unfurled today was Jimmy Johnson's 5 years, Tom Landry, 29 years. Jimmy Johnson managed in 5 years what Tom Landry took almost 30 years to do, to get in the Ring of Honor. There's only two of these guys in it.
Well, Jimmy, they had the same amount of Super Bowl wins. Obviously, Jimmy was the architect of a team that ended up winning three Super Bowls. And I would like to say that Tom went to some ungodly amount of like NFC title games in a row. And at one point it was like 17 out of 21 years, they went to NFC title games. So that was pretty remarkable in its own.
So everybody probably wants to know, like, how did Jimmy and Jerry react? And it was much like the day that they separated in 1994, where, you know, Jerry gave Jimmy $2 million basically to buy his goodwill, if not his silence. And so they parted in a very fake way. It was not an honest assessment of their relationship and the issues that caused them to end their partnership prematurely after just 5 years, when Jerry signed him to a 10-year contract, as he admitted today. But the other thing I think Jerry smartly did was, he withheld this, as I said, for 30 years. So Jimmy could only go so far, really, in criticizing Jerry during that period of time if he wanted to be in the Ring of Honor, which he definitely did. It comes after he was put in the Hall of Fame, recognized by the Hall of Fame. But Jerry effectively leveraged Jimmy into playing along all this time. And so we got, you know, kind of got fake Jimmy again, where I think he was honest when he said, you know, nobody understands what this means to me. I think he was being truthful in that, you know, but like somebody asked Jerry why giving Jimmy the credit he deserved was so hard for him. And Jimmy like intercepted the question and said, let me answer that. And basically said, you know, we're beyond the point now of who deserves credit for what. You know, he did his part, I did my part. We had a lot of help with players and staff and all that kind of stuff. So obviously they've continued to some degree to misrepresent things. When Jerry and Jimmy both say they never had a contentious meeting in their 5 years, well, then how do you explain what happened that ended this thing so abruptly and with so much promise, you know, still existing? I mean, we've talked to Darren Woodson and Troy Aikman, and those guys are all remain irritated, if not bitter, by the fact that they felt like they could have done what the Patriots did. You know, Troy said, you know, you and I could have been what Tom Brady and Bill Belichick were if egos hadn't gotten in the way.
You know, you just made me think of something. And Jerry looked up to Al Davis, and I think he was somewhat of a big brother to him or a mentor. But, like, when Al had disagreements, it was forever. Like, there were never, like, let's get back together and put you in the...
These people were banished from his life.
Yes.
You're dead to me, as Parcells used to say. You're dead to me.
Yeah. And Jerry lets people back in, even when he's been mad. So, Jerry...
I've been let back in a few times. Not that I expect the Ring of Honor, but
well,
to a lesser degree.
If any media member does. Yeah.
I thought the funny thing, last thing I want to say about this, is the funny thing is I wound up sitting in the front row today, and sitting next to me, Rick Gosselin.
Oh, yeah.
And Rick and I were the ones in the bar in Orlando with Jerry where all this went to hell because of what Jerry said in the bar. And then Jimmy found out about it and put it on the record for us. And ultimately, that incident a couple days later led to Jimmy's resignation, firing, whatever they want to call it now. But it was like Rick and I were sitting there and we were sort of forcing them to, we were limiting their ability to misrepresent their relationship and the issues that they had because we were sitting right there and they knew we could correct them if we chose to do so.
Did Jimmy, with you or Goose, did he, during the deal, like, acknowledge you or smile or anything?
I thought his speech was great.
Yeah,
like engaging with all his, you know, former players, with Michael and Emmett, and them put, you know, patting down his hair like they messed it up after the first Super Bowl win in Pasadena, and you know, it was great to see the engagement that he had with those players, and it obviously does mean a lot to him, and it should mean a lot to him.
And he's aged gracefully, and he's still, he's every bit as good, like, on TV as he was, you know, whatever, 20 years ago and all that. So it was fun to see. And then, of course, he built to the huge moment. How about them Cowboys?
It could only end one way, right?
Yeah. And we had that. But to see Roger and everybody down there was kind of neat. You know, all the members of the Ring of Honor that are still around. You know,
they obviously embraced him and know well that he deserves the honor.
Yes.
And felt, you know, like the more modern day players, like, you know, Troy and the guys who played for Jimmy all felt like the thing was not complete until their head coach was a part of it.
Now, I was probably over there getting some nachos or something, but then I got back in and I listened to everything. But it seems like when I first saw one of these ceremonies at Texas Stadium circa 2000 or 2001 or whatever it was, like, they used to have cars that would go around, right?
That was a big breakthrough moment in Jimmy and Troy's relationship. When they were doing that one day, Troy said to Jimmy, as bad as it's been, one day that'll be me and you riding on the back of a Cadillac at Texas Stadium. He got a little wrong, as it turned out, because it took 30 years. But Texas Stadium is no more, and they don't drive cars around here.
I miss the cars. I did like seeing the guys on the back of those cars. And it was, I'm sure it was some sponsored, some car
with
dealership.
Their parade waves and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, Mel Renfro, the whole thing. Okay, it is time to ask Stephen Simcox to please play the music.
Just tell him to do it.
All right, there it is, and Doomsday Podcast. And Ed, it's a strange feeling after this one because, as Jerry said, he, you know, died three times, I believe is what he said. And I was with him for a long time. You've seen some of the pictures. I have to kind of get back there behind him and kind of give him the side eye. But there's some things I want to get into with you, Ed, at some point. We don't have to do it right off the bat, but like, that's one thing I asked him about was some of the game management stuff that happened late. And he bit, he was like, yeah. And he called it he basically said it was a mix-up. He thought it might have been a mix-up somehow that caused the Cowboys to do that. But only the Cowboys, Ed, and only Mike McCarthy would have a ball go flying like 10 yards out of bounds when they desperately needed to run clock and make the Detroit Lions use all their timeouts. Okay, we'll go.
So on a night where Jimmy Johnson was honored for his coaching brilliance, Mike McCarthy invited criticism of his game management yet again. It's not the first time. Why it really seemed to me, and I don't know where you want to go, but it really seemed to me fun. Walking down to the locker room for the press conferences after the game, you know, the game's still being played out, that once they got the Donovan Wilson interception, like the game should have been over. Like if you're really a good team, you close it out. And they failed both on offense and defense after that.
Yeah.
And put the game in jeopardy and really should have lost. They should have lost because I think the thing you're referring to is the second down pass. When they had the ball on the 24, second down pass, they throw incomplete. They stop the clock. And basically in that series after the Wilson interception that leads to the Brandon Aubrey field goal, they took 24 seconds off the clock.
Yeah.
24 seconds. If they don't throw, they obviously take 40 more seconds off the clock.
Yeah.
And so that was horrible. And then equally bad was the way the Dan Quinn's defense played on that next series and basically played soft zone, didn't get a pass rush, and let them go right down and score. Just like they did on, you know, last week in Miami, except this time it was a touchdown and a two-point conversion very closely, very nearly.
Yes. And I had somebody, I don't want to get too specific with who it was, but like I there were even people around the organization after the game that were like really like that, what you're just talking about, throwing the ball deep and out of bounds, not even close. And you were down there talking to Dak. I spent a lot of time with Jerry after the game. And we'll hear from Jordan Lewis. I also got to visit with Jordan Lewis, and he was kind of funny, and he talked about his interception. It'll be good to hear from him. But I think people were like, even within the organization, and even Jerry to a certain extent was just kind of like, yeah, that's bad. Like what happened there was really, and I mean, again, this head coach, and I know he wins a lot of games here.
He could win 12 games 3 years in a row.
Yeah. But he still does these baffling things.
Right.
But you said Dak took a little bit of responsibility for that.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I would say that Dan Campbell is probably going to be criticized in a way that McCarthy should be because, you know, he went for it regardless of circumstance.
Correct.
Even after he was penalized, he went for it from the 7-yard line or whatever that was. But it was inexcusable that the Cowboys are throwing the ball. I mean, McCarthy, when I asked him about it after the game, said he was trying to win the game there. Well, sometimes winning the game doesn't mean scoring more points. Sometimes it means getting the clock down to nothing or burning their timeouts. And he did that in a very ineffective way. In fact, Mike Lombardi, who has been a part of the NFL in front offices before, called it coaching malpractice.
I thought so.
I mean, they gave the Lions an extra 40 seconds, and they used it to go score a touchdown and very easily could have won the game and probably should have won the game.
And what would we be talking about other than, hey, oh, the Cowboys allowed them to do this again. Oh, it's three games in a row. I mean, Right. Think about all the things we'd be talking about. But this head coach lost a game.
Right.
I mean, by mismanaging a game.
And they have to – and now they go into the playoffs. There's no chance of having any real momentum. They've eliminated the possibility of having a home game. They'll have lost three in a row to playoff-caliber teams. What can you do in Washington that's going to change that going into the postseason? Nothing.
Yeah. Nothing.
And it would have been, oh, my God, McCarthy's, you know, he's going out of contract. What if he loses again in the playoffs? He's only got 1 year left on his deal. So it's set up so they have to address it. Would Jerry make a coaching change, even though he's won 36 games in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
35 as of right now. But, yeah, it was a bad situation. It's not the first time it's happened. Dak Prescott did, as you referenced, take some responsibility for the poor throw to Brandon Cooks. Said he had a better option and he should have taken it and that'll keep him up at night. But I think he was kind of just covering for his coach.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, on that same thing we're talking about, they were first and 25, okay, on a block in the back or a tripping penalty.
Tripping.
But they get it to second and 14 on a nice pass to CD, who, by the way, we should talk about that. CD Lamb, 227 yards, now the single season all-time Cowboys record, passes Michael Irvin for that.
For receptions and yards.
Receptions and yards, over, what, 1,600 receiving yards, and was unbelievable. Now, he did get down there and was carrying the ball out, and he fumbles the ball into the end zone for a touchback. That was another, you know, I mean, think about how many times the Cowboys have done that lately. They fumble the ball down there when they have a chance to.
They just lost the ball on the 1 yard line last week.
That's what I'm saying.
2 weeks in a row, they've lost the ball on the 1 yard line.
Yes.
In this case, he had the ball secured, and as he was being tackled, it appeared he was trying to change hands so he could extend it over the pylon and score. And when he tried to change hands because of the contact and that coming with the ground, he lost control of the ball. And, you know, that's one of those plays that people think are too punitive. Like they've talked, I was at the owners' meetings and they talked to Troy Vincent about how about changing that rule. And there is some discussion about changing that rule because there's a feeling it's too punitive. But really, it's the only rule in football that doesn't favor the offense. Like that, the whole goal is to score. And if you screw it up so badly that you fumble the ball into the end zone and out of the end zone, that you should lose the ball. So I don't know that that's going to change.
Yeah, I don't really think.
But yeah, I think CeeDee had. One of the highest, you know, totals in terms of third down yards, 162 yards on third down tonight. He's had a touchdown reception in 9 consecutive games, which is a team record. And this is a guy who's playing out his contract. He's making a lot of money.
Yeah.
In addition to a lot of plays.
One point they said like yards after catch and it was like 166. And I mean, he just kept adding to it. And I mean, how many enormous contracts are they going to have to pay?
Micah,
Dak. Right. I mean, Dak could not. He didn't have to win playoff games. He's going to make $60 million a year. I mean, that's just the way they do with him. Yeah.
Pollard's an $11 million player. I can't imagine he comes back.
No.
With the year he's had as a number one player at that salary. So, yeah, they'll have some big decisions to make in the offseason. But for now, they've won their 11th game. They're going to the playoffs. Probably on the road where we know they've lost 5 times, but at least I think my sense was this was important to them, not only to avoid a 3-game losing streak, but to beat somebody of consequence, you know, in a closely contested game, winning by a point, game that went back and forth. They really haven't had a game like this year that they've won that I can recall. So I think it was meaningful to them in that regard. You know, McCarthy, a couple of weeks ago, used a phrase before the Buffalo game that we have playoff type games without playoff consequences. So this gets you ready for, hey, you're playing for your season, you know?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I wanted to talk also a little bit on the defensive side, because Nadak had the one interception, but from a Cowboys defensive side, and we'll hear from this guy in a minute, but I mean, Jordan Lewis, and that was a weird play by Goff. I mean, you know, they're kind of trying to
screen,
set up a screen. And I think initially, you'll hear Jordan Lewis talk about this. He was just going to come up and try to make a hit. They do a nice job of, he's made some plays behind the line of scrimmage. And he's picked the pass off. And then later in the game, Donovan Wilson, you talked about it earlier, and we thought that was going to wrap things up for the Cowboys. And he breaks on a football and makes a gorgeous interception, like a diving. I mean, these things, it's interesting that they're missing the huge interception guy in Trayvon Diggs, who everything he gets his hands on, and he makes great, and he's unbelievable at high pointing balls, and yet they kind of have a bunch of guys that can do it, it seems. And
by design.
Yeah.
That's the kind of player they're looking for, ball hawking yes. type players.
But those were
– But going into this game, I was amazed that, you know, first of all, that element of this defense, pressuring the quarterback and creating takeaways, that's their identity on defense. And we talk about the five losses on the road. In four of those games, they got no takeaways. And in the other one, the 49er game, they got one. So they have a big negative turnover ratio on the road and a huge positive one at home. Mm-hmm. Tonight was weird in that the Lions took the ball away from the Cowboys twice and didn't score any points off the two takeaways. And the Cowboys had two takeaways and only scored 3 points off of it. But coming into the game, they had not had a turnover, a takeaway in each of the last two games. That was the longest streak of – not only is it the longest streak of Dan Quinn's time here, which is now 53 games, but it hadn't happened. They hadn't gone consecutive games without a takeaway on defense since 2001. So at least they're back on that track again.
I noticed they put a graphic up on Monday Night Football. And it was Rod Marinelli, and who's the poor guy that was
Mike Nolan?
Mike Nolan. And it was like their takeaways and everything, and compared to what Dan Quinn has done, and it was just massively different. It was like two seasons of that with two seasons or however many seasons.
Nolan only got one season.
Quinn.
Yeah,
but they combined whatever, two or three seasons,
and then three seasons
put it up with Quinn.
Yeah.
And the numbers were just like – off the charts. It was kind of funny. Let's hear from – this is Cowboys cornerback Jordan Lewis, who's been playing really well. And, in fact, you'll hear from Stretcher in a little while. He thinks this was one of his better games from what he could tell. But at the end of this, if you're wondering why he gets so excited about the Pistons' losing streak ending at an NBA record – they didn't break the record. They've tied the record for most consecutive losses at 28 – but he's a Michigan man, and he grew up, and he's a huge Pistons fan. I think grew up a Lions fan. So this meant a lot to him, and that's why there's so much Pistons.
And he got hurt against them last year.
And he got hurt against them. There's a lot here. Here is our interview with Jordan Lewis moments after the game.
The interception, like, obviously – read it all the way. Mm-hmm. What did you kind of see? Did you see the screen just immediately and react?
No, I saw him stop. So I saw the motion go back, and I knew once the motion went back and the back flared out and spotted up, I knew that he wanted to set up a screen. So I tried to initially hit him, and I just waited for the ball. He threw the ball, and, you know, we got the ball back for our offense.
You got the Michigan tattoo on your arm, Detroit guy. How much did it mean to make that kind of play against this
team? I mean, it was definitely a big game. So it definitely felt good, not only because, you know, I'm a Detroit guy, but it definitely is good for our momentum going forward, you know, heading to the playoffs. So we wanted to get a good win against a good team, and you know, we did that. I mean, it was hard fought win, you know, not as pretty as we wanted to be, but we got the win.
Obviously, tough injury last year. You've been, you know, able to play week one, and but the last few weeks it feels like you kind of stepped up a little bit more. How have you felt the last few weeks, and what does that mean?
I've been feeling better, you know. Just finding ways to maintain, you know, play and, you know, keep the swelling down on my foot and making sure I can, you know, go out there and perform my best, finding ways to get better every day, you know. So I kind of found like I got a rhythm later on in the season, and I feel like I'm playing as good as ball as I've been playing. So
what were your emotions
thinking the game was over when it looked like they scored the big man touchdown. Did you immediately, it took them a little bit to throw that flag.
Yeah, we thought the game was over. But, you know, we've been working on that those guys reporting eligible all week. So we knew that, you know, somebody didn't report eligible, that they would have to throw the flag. So we knew one guy was eligible, so they didn't call another guy eligible. So that's when they called the flag. And we just knew that, you know, we just had to stop them those next two times.
Did it feel like you had to win the game like three times, basically, down there at the end?
I mean, whatever opportunity we had to stop them, we wanted to go out there and do it. So, I mean, that's our job, to stop them, you know, not let them in the end zone. And we didn't do it, you know, to perfection, but it got done. So.
You guys had no turnovers the last 2 weeks. Obviously, you get the first one today. Mm-hmm. How much of an added emphasis was it this week?
That's our mantra, getting the ball back for our offense, being an opportunistic defense, getting the ball back. So it definitely felt good to get two turnovers in that game. Like you said, we've been on a drought. So that's definitely good momentum going into the game, because, you know, turnovers come in bunches, so it was definitely a plus for us.
It was a light to see Donovan also, another guy that kind of enters this offseason.
It was amazing. I mean, that was true form. That was definitely something Dono, we know Black can do. And that was a great read. It was amazing play under pressure and, you know, just reading his keys and making the play. So, I mean, we know he's a playmaker. Everybody knows he's a playmaker on defense, and that was one of the big plays, you know, in the game.
How much more special is it to get that interception against Detroit, not only because of what happened last year in the game, but also you being from
the It felt good, but like I said, I mean, it's just a momentum for us to get to the next game. Definitely we needed a turnover because we've been in a drought, and we just want to get another turnover for our offense and, you know, play defense like how we knew we could play defense.
Jordan, last drive aside, how important was it to be a bend but don't break defense and, you know, not?
We just want to play to our standard, honestly. It's not really too much, you know, bending or not breaking. It's just playing to our standard. I feel like we did that, you know, kind of got sloppy at the end of the game, but we played better. We definitely played better as a whole.
I know it's the other side of the ball, but what's it like watching CD when he's in a zone like that?
I mean, look, man, I think he might have entered the MVP chat, man. Looked like it, bro, with 200 yards. I mean, he's just amazing, man. He's cold-blooded. He just makes play after play, you know, after every single possession they have it, you know, they know he's gonna get the ball, and he just, you know, executes. So, I mean, it's definitely amazing. It feels good to have that type of safety blanket on offense.
Jordan, you surprised he kept going for two?
No, I knew Dan Campbell wanted to go for two. I mean, he wanted to win like that. And, you know, that's in his history. A lot of times he goes on fourth down a lot, too. So we knew that he was going to keep trying it. So.
Do you have any idea what happened on the first one, what they called?
It was illegal. It was an ineligible receiver. So somebody didn't report eligible. So they had two guys that were supposed to report eligible, and only one reported. So that's when they got the flag.
When that play kind of happens, when someone reports eligible, but they also go, you know, with an overload on one side, I guess, mm-hmm. How tough is it to really just kind of keep dragging through the math when you're in?
I mean, it's definitely a good one. It's definitely a change up, something that, you know, they do every once in a while. We knew they didn't like to do, but, you know, it's definitely something that, you know, can catch you off guard when you see it. So we just got to stay on our keys, you know, listen out for, you know, the refs calls, and, you know, if guys are reporting eligible, so we can't let that happen again.
How bad do you feel like you needed this one after coming off the two losses?
We needed to win regardless, you know, going into the playoffs. It didn't matter, you know. We definitely want to win the division, and, you know, that we took that next step. Obviously, we need some help, but we definitely took that next step, and, you know, we're looking forward to Washington. I mean, we just want to clean up and get another win and head into the playoffs.
Just root against the Eagles tomorrow.
It's always that, but we got to take care of business, honestly. Washington isn't a slouch. They have a lot of good talent. We just got to watch the film, clean up what we did today, and, you know, get ready for Washington.
Mike's talked about these three games being playoff games without playoff consequences. To win one of these three games?
I mean, it feels good. I mean, that's a division, you know, contender for sure. That's a conference contender, the Lions, and they're really good. They're tough. They play really well. They have a really good system, and they have really good players. So, I mean, to get a win like this is definitely good for our momentum and you know, going into the postseason.
To keep the ball.
So what? So we keep the ball. We probably get them after the season. So we keep them in the Shark Tank. So keep Coach Dan Quinn got them.
You gonna give them to the relatives that are Lions fans and show them?
After the season, yeah, I got two of them. So yeah.
It's a good night because the Pistons win.
The Pistons won. Yeah. The Pistons won. No way, the Pistons won. Yeah, that's, hell yeah, absolutely. You just made my day, bro. Yeah, heck yeah, that was. Yeah. That's amazing. Appreciate it. Yeah, this is a hell of a day. That's what's up, bro.
That's a real miracle.
Won. Hell, the Pistons won. They didn't get the streak. They didn't get the streak. So they tied it. They didn't break it. Oh, my God. Yes. Yeah, that's good. That's amazing. Now, hell yeah. Thank you so much.
Y'all sacrificed the Pistons for so long.
Yeah, it looks good, but not against us. I appreciate it. I'm glad that Juju didn't come on us.
We got one more to go this weekend, though. We got Monday.
So. Really?
Yeah,
you're right. Damn, come on, man. let me bask in this right now. But yeah, we definitely got to get it done against Alabama. But I'm excited. I mean, shit, I'm 2-0 tonight. Yeah. So yeah, that's really big. So,
all right, there it was, Jordan Lewis. And Ed, I do want to take the opportunity right now to thank one of our great sponsors the last 2 years, Marable Homes. It's Marable Homes.com. Ed, I just thought I'd pull this up so you could see it. It's just some of the, this is great for podcasts when I'm just showing Ed pictures. But I mean, look at that, like the front of one of those Marable homes. Does that not look like something you would want to move into? And then there's like one of the houses right there.
Huge home.
And I'm just looking at like
discreet.
Over on approachable luxury home. That's what we like to say. Aaron, Ed, look at this. Edge Pine, Dartridge, Shoreview, sold. I mean, these are, golly,
man. Did we get a commission cut on those?
Yeah, look at that. Look at that that claw tooth or whatever you call that bathtub there. I mean, just think if you could climb into that bathtub, Ed. Just wonderful folks, and we appreciate it. And again, as they say, a home should be designed to inspire and improve the lives of those within it and around it. And they do a great job, and that's Preston Hollow. They would build one out in the land of Flower Mound where you like to live. And, I mean, Highland Park, the Park Cities area. Now they're building them on Cedar Creek, Lake Highlands. Gorgeous, gorgeous homes. And we love what they're doing, and we love our association with Marable Homes. All right, Ed, we'll get to Stretch in a second, but there's a couple things, a couple other things we need to talk about. I wanted to get your take, and I think people will want our take, what we've kind of learned about that final play. It looked like the game was over, and they threw a pass to Taylor Decker, who is their starting tackle. He says he reported as eligible, and some of the I've watched the replays of this, and they show both he and the guy the referee said reported eligible, Skipper. For some reason, I think of like Gilligan's Island.
Dan Skipper?
I don't know. Last name Skipper. The ref said Skipper reported eligible. And so they throw the game-winning touchdown, a big man touchdown, to Taylor Decker. He catches it. Jerry admits he thought the game was over. Everybody thought the game was over. And then all of a sudden the flags start going. And somebody said it was right over there in front of the Cowboys sideline. The female official was
Sarah Thomas.
Sarah Thomas threw the flag, and then there was another flag. And then so after the game, our buddy Calvin Watkins from the Dallas Morning News was the pool reporter, and he asked the officials, okay, were there two flags? And they said, yeah, because it was illegal touching because Decker didn't report, and he ends up with, you know, he's left line up at left tackle.
He's also been uncovered.
Yeah.
So he drew both penalties because they got the reporting wrong, or so it appears, or so the Lions allege. And so video seems to support the Lions' contention here. Jared Goff said, I know that Decker reported. I know that Skipper did not. Skipper said that while he walked over there, he didn't say one thing to the officials about reporting. And Dan Campbell, who we all know and love because he played here and was a great guy as a tight end with Jason Witten and Bill Parcells' teams. You know, he said he went over all of this with the officials in a pregame meeting, that this was their play and here's what was going to happen and here are the mechanics of it. And so this should never have happened the way that it did. And it'll be interesting to see what if any repercussions are for Brad Allen, the referee.
Yeah.
Should the NFL determine that the Lions were right, that they did everything properly and basically lost a game because of incompetent officiating?
I mean, it may have been, but in the officials' defense, I think the Lions, where they screwed up, from what I can tell, is like you shouldn't have two linemen over there. They were over there talking. I mean, we've seen the replay. The two linemen were over there, and what's his name? Skipper said he didn't report eligible, but he's over there. You can tell he's trying to say something. So they're over there, and then you have to go tell the defense who has reported eligible.
The officials have to tell
the official does, and the official walks and over and tells 70. The defense and say, "Hey, Mr. Skipper over here,
and,
number 70.
And Jordan Lewis, our interview subject, said after the game that that's who they covered. They didn't cover Decker because in their minds they were not informed by Brad Allen, the official referee, that he was eligible. They had been told that Skipper was eligible. So they covered Skipper. They didn't cover Decker. It's a whole big screwed up thing.
It is. I mean, it's like a balk. You know, people like, what is a balk? I mean, like, people don't sit around and study these things. Wait, did this guy report? Did this guy report?
But there's also video of Goff sending Decker out of the huddle
To go report in,
yes. And so did he fail to do that after he was just told by his quarterback
it's
to get out of the huddle?
It's confusing because Decker's a starter, right? I mean, generally, 70 had been reporting eligible already in the game a couple of times. So
right.
He's the guy that we're used to.
As the extra tight end. Right.
And the guy, not only do they have to tell the defense, they tell all of us, right? Doesn't the referee always get on the mic and say?
It's possible that Brad Allen got the number wrong, right? The one guy had been reporting in as eligible all night, and now it was somebody else, and he didn't realize it. He thought it was the same guy because he looks up and Skipper's standing there too. To your point, which they were trying to distract the Cowboys and not let them know
who they were throwing the ball to.
Which
one was it? Right. Yeah. So part of that might have been on purpose.
But again,
the confusion.
According to Dan Campbell, they went over all the mechanics of this with Brad Allen and the officials before the game. So that's why they're so incensed.
Yeah. Yeah,
and perhaps rightly so. We'll see.
And then some poor reporter, have you seen this back and forth after the game? Do you know Dave Burkett?
Yeah, in Detroit.
Yeah, I mean, and he did kind of walked into it, but at the end of the news conference with Dan Campbell, he was like, says something along the lines of, you seem frustrated, Dan, or something like, you know, he was trying to ask him, what is the frustration from? Is it lack of execution? What is your frustration? And Dan
Why so
was
angry?
Like, yeah, Dan was like, Dave, I'm mad. We took an L here. And then as only, you know how nice a guy he is, because he is fiery, but as he's leaving, he's like, I didn't really mean that at you. I'm sorry. And he's
just agitated.
He storms off. Much like Jimmy used to do with you back in the day.
Rarely.
All right. It is time for something we call stretch plays with the Cowboys, former Cowboys scout and coach. In fact, he came in with Switzer right after Jimmy, and that is Glenn Stretch Smith. Here he is. It is stretch plays with former Cowboys scout and coach Glenn Stretch Smith. And Stretch, you and I were up there in the press box together, along with Ed, and sharing some of the game together. And I wanted to start. Let's start on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, Cowboys basically at this point, I think Pollard did have 49 yards, but they don't run the ball. Like, even when they kind of would. At a game where it'd be nice to run the ball, they don't run the ball, right? They just throw the ball to try to control the clock. And Dak threw for, 345 yards. CD had an enormous day, 227 yards receiving and a touchdown. What were your impressions overall of the offense? It was certainly moved the ball up and down the field, but at times, obviously, we're kind of undermined by both an interception and then what happened with CD down there around the goal line.
Yeah, I think you used the word inconsistent. That's what this football team is. They're very inconsistent with how they do what they do, starting with the quarterback. I mean, you know, I'm sitting up there and he misses that first seam ball to Cooks. I mean, it's a 30-yard seam ball. He's wide open. He overthrows it. The next series, he makes an unbelievable play with his legs, rips the ball out to CD for the 92-yard touchdown. And you start thinking, oh, golly, how can you feel good about number one, paying this guy that kind of money when you miss those kind of throws. And I'm saying that because I see him miss it a lot. I see inconsistency in how he delivers the football a lot. And it's starting to bother me. I'll be honest with you. Running the football, to me, I'm not real sure. It just as you look at it, you grade it, you go back and you look at it and you say, okay, well, the center's not very good. And he's not playing very good. Biotis not very good. He's not very good. The point of attack, it's not very good. But it looks like they're not coordinated well with running the football. I don't care what anybody says. The bottom line, if you're going to win and win at a high level, you have to be able to run the football and you have to be able to stop the run. I don't give a damn about the rest of it. That's all cute, throwing it and, hey, we'll get them out leveraged here. We'll run this short motion and we'll get a – to hell with that. At some point in some games, you have to know the weather's not going to be good. You're going to have to line up and just play tough football. What I like is they did it down there in the red zone before they threw the TD pass to Cooks, and you saw they ran it for 10 and then ran it for 7. They were in a 2 tight end set, 12 personnel. Then it came in with 13 personnel, hit it for 7. Now all of a sudden Detroit says, and Aaron Glenn says, oh boy, we got to stop the run. Then they blow up in there and they're able to hit Cooks on the corner. Well, that's what you want to see. So I say inconsistent because every once in a while they'll flash something at you that says, boy, I'm gonna jump on board with what they're doing here. And then they do things that just don't make any sense. And so I don't think it's very well coordinated. I'm talking about the run game. Mike Solari is a hell of an offensive line coach. It just doesn't look like they're on the same page meshing together. And the only way that this quarterback can be successful, and I'm talking about the playoffs, is to be able to run the football and have play action off of it. If you expect them to drop back 45 times a game and win the football game, that's not going to happen. And I'm talking about against good football teams. I'm not talking about teams that, and again, I don't want to get into style point and wins, but this is a very inconsistent offense. They play inconsistently and the quarterback is inconsistent. And that concerns me.
Well, that's interesting because I think I know what you're saying. I think sometimes people get mesmerized by the numbers and the numbers are good. I mean, that interception, he's running right. You know, that guy makes a nice play on the ball. Now he made a huge play when he got away from a safety and rolled out and then makes the big throw to CD. So he did make the 92-yard, you know, play there. And I one other thing I'll point out on offense stretch is that Aiden Hutchinson was whipping some people on that Cowboys O-line. He got, you know, Tyron on an inside pass rush for a sack. Then he did a spin move on Terrence Steele, and he had 3 sacks in this game. So the O-line, you mentioned Biotish. Now it looks like Tyler Smith has some kind of plantar fasciitis situation, and we'll see how he does with his foot. That's a concerning injury. There's certainly some concerns along that O-line.
And you know, I agree with you. Now let me say this. Hutchinson, I mean, he's picked in the draft because he's a good football player. And guess what? Good football players win too. It's not that I have that big of an issue with that. I have an issue with how they block the run, how they call the run, and how they block the run. How they try to get the football on the perimeter. I very seldom do you see them run toss. Very seldom do you see them get the ball outside. And so I think that's an issue. And I think when you don't have, you know, a very physical back, you know, Dowdle is kind of the 1-2 physical side of it. But I think it's an inconsistent thing. And I think when you look at it overall, if the Cowboys are going to make any kind of a playoff run here, they got to run the football. From an offensive standpoint, I just thought it was a workmanlike effort. I give the entire offense the exact same grade, and that's a C. That's just a barely a winning effort. Now, CeeDee Lamb is a hell of a football player. I mean, you'd see where, I mean, he is Dak's go-to guy. Tell the football player. I'm not taking that away from him. And they've still got really good football players on this team, but they are inconsistent. And therefore I'm giving them at best, Matt, a C. Now, do they play hard? They play hard. I mean, I'm going to give them that, but I am really concerned about the inconsistency of how they're running the football, the inconsistency of this quarterback.
Okay, let's go over the defensive side. You know, certainly Detroit had some success running at times. Jahmyr Gibbs is an extremely fast guy, and they did some things to the Cowboys in the run game. Other teams have too. Donovan Wilson, huge, great play on the interception. Jordan Lewis, big-time interception, kind of reads that really well, gets in there and makes the play. Bland continues to get burned and gave up the huge one to Jamison, you know, the player out of Alabama for the Lions. What'd you make of the defense, and where did you want to zero in on there?
I think Jordan Lewis played maybe the best game I've ever seen him play. I mean, he really did. He played his ass off. I mean, he was all over the field. He was making tackles. He was, you know, that anytime you got to cover the slot guy, that's a guy with a two-way go. That's the toughest. I don't care what anybody says. That's the toughest position at times to be in. And I thought he played really well. I mean, I saw some things out of him that you're like, man, can you build on that? I mean, those are good things. I think the safeties, still Wilson, Hooker, Curse. I mean, they play hard and they tackle well. And I thought they played well. Here's the problem, and I'm not trying to get too technical here. When the Cowboys, there were multiple times they lined up in 2-4 techniques, that's inside eye of the tackle, with a zero technique up over the nose. When you do that, there's a lot of times that you're allowing a guard to free release to the second level. When he does, the center has to get whipped. They're missing Hankins. And when you allow a guard to free release to the second level and get on a guy like Bell, who's really a 225-pound safety playing linebacker, they're going to gash you running the football. Same thing with Curse. I mean, when they have to get and really play, all you've got down in there is Clark, Bell, and Curse. That's who you have. That's who you're playing with right now. And if you line up and allow the guards to free release to get to either Curse or Bell, they're going to gash you because basically they've got it blocked all the way to the real safety, not the safety playing the linebacker. They've got it blocked to the safety. And you saw them do that some. That kind of the problem with that is it kind of shoehorns Dan Quinn into not being able to call as many things because he's got to bring those tackles down over those guards and have a real two-gap player. I think it hurts them missing Hankerson. I think that, you know, allowing Dan Quinn not to be able to really open his full defensive playbook hurts him some. But I want to tell you something. If you watch how hard they play, if you watch – whether it's Parsons, whether it's Lawrence, whether it's Bell, whether it's Clark, those safeties, I'm telling you, they play hard and they play well coached, and you can tell they give great effort. I'm going to say, yes, Bland got caught flat-footed and they ran by him. That can happen some, but I'm more inclined, Matt, to say that when I watch this, you're gonna have to do a better job of being able to attack downhill and come play the run when you get deeper into the playoffs. Because I'm just telling you right now, I can guarantee you that San Francisco is going to run the football right at you. And then they're going to play action off of it. I would bet you that, you know, going to Tampa, which looks like the most likely first week matchup, I think Baker Mayfield and the Buccaneers will try to run the ball downhill at you. And so that's something they've got to continue to get cleaned up. I thought they tackled well. I thought they made some big fourth down stops. You know, the 2-point play down there that won them the football game. I mean, there was some gray area there. They, you know, they talked about, I thought the interesting thing was I found out there were two flags thrown on the play because really 70 reported eligible, but 68 was on the ball. That's an illegal formation too, because he was covered up by the receiver. 68 and the receiver were on the football. So, you know, is it a ticky-tack call? Maybe, but the bottom line is 70 reported eligible. You threw the ball to 68. He did not report eligible. It was an illegal touch. So,
yeah,
either way, it was an illegal formation. I just think that overall defense, I'm giving them E, and I'm giving them E for a hell of an effort. They played their ass off and they played hard, and you mm-hmm. gotta give them that due when you think about how overall you're going to grade that group.
Yeah, even though for the second straight week, they were the ones, you know, they could have closed out the game and they allowed Detroit to go down there and score. And we saw it last week as well. So I agree with you. They did some really good things, and Lawrence played great, and Micah Parsons made some really good plays against the run game. There were a lot of things there. Stretch, we really appreciate it. And happy new year to you, and enjoyed all your WFAA work tonight, and appreciate it. It was a nice sport coat you had.
Well, and I appreciate it, Matt. And you had your nice, you know, I know Stephen Simcox will appreciate the fact that you got yourself a new pair of Stephen. They were kind of like that chamois that I used to drive my grandfather's truck off with, but Mosley was sporting them, and you know, he was wearing them like he was really some fashion savant. So you have to, you got to give him a little credit where it's due. So, Mosley, happy new year to you. Happy new year to Stephen Simcox. Till Ed Werder, happy new year to him.
We'll pass that along to Ed, and I think he'll be pleased to hear that from you. There it is, Glenn Stretch Smith with Stretch Plays. And now a word from one of Glenn Stretch Smith's good friends and one of my good friends, Randy Hudson, Hudson Financial Group. Let's hear from Mr. Hudson himself. When he and I got to sit down recently and talk about Hudson Financial Group. It is Mosley from the Doomsday Podcast. I'm with Randy Hudson of Hudson Financial Group, a company that he founded in 1988, not too long after his playing days at the University of North Texas. And I'm with Randy today. And Randy, we love having you as part of the Doomsday Podcast. You've got a great business out here in Heath and, boy, Carthage down into East Texas. Y'all do great business. Tell us a little bit about what you started with and then kind of what your company has become, because in terms of, you know, property and casualty insurance, it's amazing. But also, boy, you help a lot of CEOs, businesses. Tell us a little bit about what you're doing these days and to give people, you know, an example of what they could get involved with.
Sure, Matt. Thank you. Glad to be a part. We started this in 1988 when I graduated at what was North Texas State. We were the last class of graduates under North Texas State. So that makes us old, I guess. But I majored in insurance, had a double major in financial planning, and the next within 2 weeks, I was in the insurance business, opened up my first office, and 35 and a half years later, we're still doing it, so I guess we'll stick with it. My goal is to take care of people, okay? And a friend of mine and I were talking a couple weeks ago, and we said, you know, 95% of your clients are your friends, and your friends are your clients. And you want it to be that way. So we take care of people, and if they need property casualty insurance from their business to their personal to their recreational activities, we can do that. And we do. But then we get into more in-depth planning, because some people have more things that they need to be handled, so we can help them with tax planning, succession planning, you know, the business planning side, setting up corporations and companies. And so with all that, you build a relationship that lasts for years. I do have some clients that we've had for over 30 years, and that's really neat to know, to watch us grow and them grow together. So the North Texas tie is real simple. I love North Texas and love to give back, and so that's just kind of, you know, what we're able to do.
And speaking of friendships, you used to listen to, you know, Randy Galloway and I were on 103.3, and then through Glenn Stretch Smith, who you've become good friends with and is a big part of this podcast. We all sort of got to know each other. So it's kind of part of the business. It happens in broadcasting too, but we love sending people to Hudson Financial Group. Randy, appreciate it.
Okay, we appreciate that word. Also from Hudson Financial Group and Randy Hudson. And wish them a happy new year, all of our sponsors. And what a fun year it has been for all of us. Okay, Ed, let's kind of tie this thing up and put a bow on it. Cowboys now will watch the Eagles and the Cardinals and hope the Cardinals can do to the Eagles what the Cardinals did to the Cowboys. And it'll be a nice day for all of us to just watch football. Although knowing you, you'll like trying to fly out somewhere tomorrow morning and be somewhere by the afternoon to cover something. But, okay, walk us through some of these scenarios. Basically, obviously the Cowboys need some help. What's interesting is, though, for a long time we were saying, nah, if the Cowboys tie the Eagles, Eagles are going to the tiebreaker because of the conference record. But if the Eagles lose to Arizona, somehow – it's not their advantage anymore. Like the Cowboys, I think, especially this helped tonight with the conference record, the Cowboys maybe could own a tiebreaker. And so walk us through kind of what we need to look for in these next two games. Obviously, the Eagles need to lose.
Eagles need to lose one of their last two games, either Arizona or the Giants, who they just beat last week, although not by a big margin.
No.
So maybe there's some hope there for the Cowboys. And the Cowboys have to win next week at Washington in what we presume could be the last game for Ron Rivera as a head coach under Josh Harris, a new owner there. And, you know, they were going to start Jacoby Brissett. Now they're back to potentially Sam Howell because Brissett got hurt in practice the other day. And now the quarterback that they said they needed to bench, they may need to play again. So that's a little bit awkward. But the Cowboys, you would think, would handle their business, even though they haven't been a good road team, that they would beat a Washington team that's got a lot of injuries and really nothing of consequence to play for. And then can the Giants or the Cardinals tomorrow pull off an upset of the Eagles, who have been fading badly, who turn the ball over a lot, which puts them in jeopardy all the time.
Yeah. And
probably not. Probably the Cowboys are going to finish as the fifth seed. And if Tampa Bay wins tomorrow, they win the NFC South and the Cowboys would go back to Tampa for round one, and they would play Baker or Mayfield instead of Tom Brady.
Which you would think would be a good thing, but Baker's been playing really well.
Correct.
And they're on a bit of a roll. So, and the Cowboys don't play well on the road, and it's just they don't function well at all. They function – I mean, at times they didn't function great tonight, I mean, especially late. I just can't keep – I keep coming back to it, and I'm glad you even brought up what Mike Lombardi – and Mike's a – well, I've known him for a long time, and I think you've known Mike for a while. And he said that about other people, so the whole coaching
malpractice,
I've heard him say it before, but
– I think you said it at McCarthy's.
I think he has. There's certain people that he goes – revisits, like – Banner will say stuff like that too. The old
Joe
Eagles
Banner.
President, he'll kind of go at people who get the real.
He's
sharps.
Not a big McCarthy fan. Either.
I don't think he is. He's not a fan of McCarthy.
But we should give McCarthy credit for this. It's just the fourth time in. You talk about putting a bow on the show.
Yeah,
it's just the fourth time in franchise history the Cowboys have won all of their games at home in a single season. And not only that, they join the Tom Brady, Bill Belichick Patriots as the only teams in the last 25 years to win 16 straight games at home. It's the Cowboys' second longest home winning streak in franchise history. They won 18 straight from 1979 to 81. Unfortunately for them, they're probably not going to be playing at home in the postseason.
I always think that, and you're making me think about the timing of those years, of how like Cowboys still kind of think of Danny White as somewhat of a failure. And the fact is, somewhere in that time frame, he literally took the team to three straight NFC title games. And if a Cowboys quarterback, being Dak now, made an NFC title game,
he'd be in the Ring of Honor.
It just put him straight in there.
Right in the Ring of Honor.
Yeah. Yeah, Danny was doing it year after year. Everybody's like,
and nobody even thinks about putting him in the Ring of Honor.
No, no, it's like, oh, Danny's down there. Hey, Danny's okay.
Danny's doing the Spanish network radio broadcast. Hey, Danny, good job not going to the Ring of Honor.
It's Compass Media, by the way. It's not.
Oh, it's not.
It's
okay.
Not the Spanish. Danny White is not. It's Victor Viaba and the guys. Yeah. Carlos Nava, all our friends there, Luis. okay. It is. Ed Werder, Matt Mosley, signing off from AT&T Stadium. Thanks again to the Nation family. We're in the suite on the silver level right below Jimmy Johnson now.
Come by and say hello. We'll be here for another minute and
another 30 seconds. We've had a good night. Good work by you, Ed. I mean, you were out here early. You were at that news conference representing us there. And we've had a big night of interviews. Ed, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Wish all our listeners. And by the way, thank you for putting up with us. I know some of you were upset with us. We decided Christmas Eve we would take the one off, but we were not. People now are asking, were y'all going to do one for New Year's?
I'm like, all this doubt about our work ethic.
Like, we're going to do it the rest of the year. We intend to even do a playoff. We'll react to the playoff game as well. It'll likely be there. Who knows?
The playoff game? Are you saying there's only going to be one?
Is it a road game?
I don't know. It looks like it will
okay,
be.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
All right. Sign us off.
All right. From AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, I'm in for Ed Werder. I'm Matt Mosley. Good night.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.